Good morning, everybody. I'm very happy to have you here today for the latest edition of our Flint briefing calls. Today, we will talk about what to expect from the new European Commission on Financial Services. I am Gregor Kreuzhuber. I'm the managing partner at Flint European Brussels, and I'm joined by my two distinguished colleagues. First and foremost, Flint senior advisor, chair of Eurofi, and former deputy director general of TG FISMA, David Wright, and Fiona Wright, they are not related, Flint partner and our financial services lead here in Brussels at European Union level. About the subject matter, by means of introduction, it is obvious that the post-24 EU financial services agenda will not primarily be driven by the changes in the European Parliament. You know that there's elections happening in June, and the changes in some member state governments, it will rather be driven by current political shifts, and especially the question how they are impacting Commission President Ursula von der Leyen in her quest for re-nomination. As you know, she stands a good chance of being designated and nominated and put into office again later this year. During this call today, we will talk about the key drivers of this agenda and what currently looks likely to be the financial services priorities for the next mandate of the European Commission and the European institutions. All in all, we have 30 minutes. As usual, lines are muted and we won't be able to take questions during the call, but do let us know if there's anything you would like to discuss afterwards. We'll divide the call into two main blocks. First, we focus on where we are right now, the state of play, and then on what we expect to see during the next mandate of the European Commission. So starting with the state of play, turning to David, will you shed some light onto what the European Commission has achieved in the financial services space during its current mandate? Personally, it strikes me that the financial services in general has not necessarily been a massive priority for Ursula von der Leyen's first term, or am I wrong?
Good morning, Gregor, and good morning, everybody. Let me begin by roughly giving you a quick view of where we are, why we are where we are, and whether we're seeing any particular changes as we approach the new political cycle. First of all, I mean, the previous commission, not this commission, the previous one, in my view, achieved very little. This commission has been more active, but I think the results are mixed. And I would argue that we don't even have the glass half full yet. If you look at the achievements of this commission, I mean, the commission has tabled all of the 16 measures of its action plan. That is a good thing. There have been agreements on the consolidated TAPE, the European single access point. I think that's going to be important in the future. A listing act has been agreed. The Basel III package has been agreed with great difficulty. The long-term investment funds, LTIFs, have been agreed. And of course, we must always bear in mind the new generation European Union programs, 800 billion euros of expenditure, but the problem being there that it's only 20 to 30% has been absorbed. And of course, a lot of people saying it's far too slow and bureaucratic and well behind the sort of US equivalent, the IRA. But let's look at what has not been achieved and what is, in my view, there's some very big pieces here. First of all, on pensions, which is, you know, the bedrock of much of the U.S. capital market, there's been no progress on the PEPP, Pan-European Pension Product, that hasn't taken off, and no progress at all on building level two, level three pensions. Securitization, which I think the industry, in financial industry, strongly favors, has not even had a proposal to amend the current rules, which are far too restrictive. There's been no progress on insolvency or withholding tax procedures. The retail package is spilling over to the next commission, and in my view, misses a key point, which is how to use technology. The clearing and settlement infrastructure outcome is messy. Most people, I think, from a strategic autonomy point of view, think it's been rather disappointing. We've seen no big cross-border mergers either on infrastructures or stock markets or whatever. European capital markets, there's not much evidence they're deepening. And cross-border banking is actually less than it was 10 years ago. This sounds very negative, but I think it's the reality. The SME financing still remains way behind the US equivalent. We're losing listings to the United States. And as we know, banking union is completely stuck on the European depository European depository system, EDIS. Now, why is this? Why are we in this situation? In my view, I think one of the key issues here is that there's been a missing political leadership by all the institutions, the Commission, the Parliament, and the European Council. The whole package of the Commission's measures, its action plan, have been grinding through the institutions piece by piece. There's been no sort of overall political delivery agreement, which I've always argued is necessary. The President of the Commission has been admirable in many ways, and I think she's done a great job, speaking personally here. But there has been no leadership, really strong leadership, about financial integration. We've only had, for example, three references in all her speeches, which number more than 250, to a financial integration at all. And I think the Commission has been seeking agreements maybe at the lowest common denominator level rather than pushing forward for more ambitious outcomes. So I think the sum today, if we're honest, is that there is a lack of political dynamism so far, no real evidence of markets being excited about European integration, no great new investments on the ground. And I think that is really quite a serious situation, which is beginning now to change. And let me finish on this point here, that the new geopolitical challenges that Europe faces, let me just quickly talk about them: security, defense, health, supply chains, green transition, research, telecom, energy, and so forth. I think there's a growing understanding now that those major challenges can only be largely financed through the private sector, and therefore capital market union integration is absolutely essential. And that is why we're seeing a flurry of new reports and ideas coming forward from the ECB, from the Eurogroup, Letta, Draghi, Christian Noyer in France, and many others. So maybe we're beginning to see now a change of emphasis, a quantum change in political need. Gregor.
Thank you, David. You're painting a not necessarily a very uplifting picture here, but I mean, one specific follow-up question on this one. I mean, since we're all expecting von der Leyen to get a second term, right? What makes you confident that the next leadership of the European Commission, which will most likely be the same as we have now, will sort of change gear and move forward in the next 5 years to come?
Well, in a way, it's what I was beginning to say at the end there, that I think there is a much greater understanding that unless Europe can build a deep capital market, it simply cannot deliver the big challenges there that I mentioned just now. And we can see right now the troubles of trying to find a big increment in defense expenditure. How is that going to be managed if in a context of constrained public budgets, high levels of public debt, an aging population? So I do think that there is a change of mood, that the capital markets are essential to develop. And I think that a lot of people understand that You know, a few key issues are going to have to be a part of this. Let me just briefly say what I think they are. I mean, first of all, is there has to be very strong political leadership. If there's not, this is not going to happen. And I've always argued in terms of having a trilateral political agreement with the three institutions for a plan and also a timetable. Secondly, I think more work needs to be done on convincing member states that all of this is very beneficial for them in the medium term. It's part of the competitiveness agenda. It's part of raising capital for small companies. So I've argued that in the past that we need a sort of financial Cecchini report, a report that would substantially show that this is really beneficial, an integrated capital market for Europe. The third thing I would say is that I do think that the markets can help here. And one wonders whether this will happen. But if we were to see some big cross-border mergers in infrastructure or stock exchanges, the Commission referred to this in her Financial Times article this week, I think that would make a difference. We need the proper governance in the European supervisory authorities. We need a much more logical shape and responsibilities for them. And I think in the next cycle, I think everybody's sort of understood that we can't have a sort of a long arbre de Noël of measures. We need to focus on the really big pieces: securitization, pensions, withholding tax, and insolvency, and so forth. Some of those things that I mentioned that have not worked, but I think people realize now those are the key pieces that have to be done. And I think the final aspect of this, Gregor, is setting ourselves in Europe a bigger target, a much more ambitious set of technology targets on clearing and settlement. For example, the US is moving to T+1. Europe is going to have to move there. We need to use these new AI and distributed ledger technologies, and also using technology to help retail customers into the capital markets. Now, is this all this going to happen? I can't tell you that. But what I can tell you is what I said at the beginning, that I do think there is a step change, a quantum step change in the understanding that this is an essential part of the next European political cycle. And let's hope we get a good set of proposals emanating from it. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Good to hear that there's hope. Now, sort of turning to the second part of the conversation, which is more about looking ahead. I turn to Fiona. Could you outline how the financial services agenda for the next Commission mandate and the next Parliament mandate, how it is developed? What it is it really influenced by? How does that work going forward?
Thank you, Gregor, and good morning, everybody. In terms of the development of the agenda, I think I would major on two points. One is some of this is pro forma and is done across all DGs in the Commission at this time in the cycle. So DG FISMA started thinking on possible priorities for the new Commission already at the end of last year and has been developing briefings for new commissioners coming in next year. And that's being done across the Commission and will escalate to a formal process in the Secretariat General in the coming weeks and months. So that's the pro forma piece. And I think picking up on what David was saying, what's really unusual here is that financial services is going to be more important, or at least we hope it's going to be picked up as more important because of external factors. I mean, the last big burst of financial regulation we had was triggered by the financial crisis. It was very much an industry-focused affair. Whereas here, as David's been saying, the external environment, the macroeconomic outlook, growth, productivity are not where they should be. Internationally, we're faced with some very challenging circumstances from conflicts in Gaza and Ukraine to the prospect of Trump 2 at the end of this year in the US, which is obviously setting a lot of hairs running around Brussels. So if you look at the Eurogroup statement of a couple of weeks ago about this, the way forward on CMU, it is essentially the same questions we've all been looking at for, you know, a decade or more here in Brussels. But what is changing is the environment and the fact that the Eurogroup, the ministers, felt compelled to restate some of this at the political level, I think tells you a lot about the pressures coming to bear on the environment and how we might see this taken forward in the next few months. The Eurogroup statement is, of course, going to be followed in short order by the letter report on the single market and then Mr. Draghi's report on the competitiveness of the European economy, which is being a huge topic of discussion here in Brussels. For those of you that have been through one of these transitions, there's a lot of talk, but it's quite unusual. This is my fourth transition, to see this formulation of reports kind of teeing up the debate as we move into the electoral cycle. So we've got the macroeconomic geopolitical outlook, and we've also got something of a rightward shift in many member states, or several member states, and also in the European Parliament. We're expecting right or center groups like the ECR and the ID group to pick up quite a number of seats. And as was previously discussed, Mrs. von der Leyen is reflecting back some of the priorities from the CDU and CSU colleagues about the pressures on European companies and the need for a level playing field internationally and that type of thing. So this is all coming together, and this will continue to develop in the coming months. I mean, as Gregor said at the beginning, this is a starting point for the debate. It's not the end point. I think it was Harold Wilson who was attributed with saying a week is a long time in politics, where we're talking about a period of several months here in a fairly febrile geopolitical environment and macroeconomic outlook looking not so healthy. So there's two elements there, one very pro forma, very commission-centric, and the other one very externally driven that could push forward and formulate the rest of this agenda as we go through the coming months. And then finally, just to remind folks on the line, we also have the other angle of unfinished business here, which again is quite unusual in my experience. Internally, we looked across all the FS files that are not going to be finished by the end of the mandate. And we're estimating there'll be 13 open files at the end of this mandate, which in previous cycles, we saw maybe two or three. So 13 is really unprecedented. And across very important areas like payments policy, data policy, digital euro, there's a lot of work. And also on the banking side, CMDI, EDIS, there's a lot of business out there that will need to be picked up and taken forward. So even though the Commission say we're not going to do a lot of new policy, they've got a lot of existing policy to take care of. And we're also looking at a lot of implementation and adjustments to existing files like the sustainable finance framework and things of that nature. And I'll stop there. Gregor?
Thank you, Fiona. I think that's a very pertinent point to be aware of, that, I mean, if you look forward in a broader sense, what's going to happen in the next term under potentially von der Leyen too, there will probably be less green and more sort of industry-friendly policies given the shift to the right Fiona has just mentioned. I think that is clear. The question will be to what extent von der Leyen at a certain point will pivot back once she has confirmation and the necessary votes in the European Parliament, and then slightly pull back on some of the very industry-friendly statements she has recently made. So this is definitely one area to watch very carefully. And competitiveness, indeed, largely very loom over all the political programs of the political groups in the European Parliament who have now finalized their manifestos. So that's definitely one to watch. But Fiona, I mean, if we sort of try to drill a little bit more down on what the expectation is, the key priorities in financial services will be in practice over the next five years, what would you name as sort of the key initiatives you expect to come?
Of course. As I said, this is all a work in progress, but I think the building blocks that are very clear right now are around, for starters, sustainable finance. I'm sure lots of listeners will be aware of the SFDR review, going back and looking at sustainability requirements for financial intermediaries, such as asset managers. The Commission have already consulted on this review, and we're expecting some legislation quite early in the new mandate. And this will obviously have read across into other areas of the sustainable finance agenda, such as the taxonomy, the CSDR, which also reflects on the burden on the perceived burden on European businesses and some of the issues we've seen raised by agricultural protesters across Brussels and much of Northern Europe in recent years. So that's one area, sustainable finance. Economic security, again, it's more about outside the financial services space, but there's some real tensions about the private investment flows that are needed for green and digital transitions. As David said, there's a real awareness that the kind of fiscal headroom to fund a lot of this is just not there. Therefore, we need much more investment from the private sector. And what we're seeing is this kind of bifurcation between certain factions who believe the solution is to be able to access the considerable savings of European citizens and businesses, which we've been trying to do here in Brussels for many, many years. But there's also a tension with foreign investment. Obviously, Europe is a very attractive FDI destination currently, and there's concerns about maintaining that where when we try to pivot and become more kind of internally focused on the single market and such so forth. So economic security is going to have kind of spillover effects into the financial services space, and in particular on where we're going to get investment from. Can we generate enough from within the EU, and what role do we see for FDI going forward, balancing out the economic security concerns we've seen recently about being too dependent on unreliable partners for foreign export markets or for service provision or things of that nature. And then finally, the other point I would mention is technology. Obviously, in the financial sector, everyone's day job is about risk management. And historically, going back 10 years to cloud computing, it's always been about new tech presents a risk to the financial system that has to be managed. And there's a big struggle to try to balance risk management against the potential of innovation. We've seen this with cloud. We've seen it on blockchain. And of course, a big focus is going to be AI and tokenization of assets going into the new commission and how to manage the opportunities that technology presents to a hard-pressed financial sector, looking for bigger profit margins, more efficient operations, and so forth. And then the underlying stability of the system. And as we all know, in cloud computing, we ended up with DORA, which was about critical infrastructure. And obviously, the way technology is developing in the financial sector, we're having a lot more dependency on critical service providers across AI and across other forms of technology very commonly used. So that will also be a big focus.
Thank you, Fiona. We have a little bit more than 5 minutes left. I would like to use to tackle two specific questions. One, David, according to your experience, having been a senior official in the European Commission for many years, I mean, how does this transition work also in terms of personality? If von der Leyen stays, does that mean existing commissioners will stay? Is there speculation about who is going to take over the job of Dombrovskis? What's going to happen to Thierry Breton, who is, as we all know, sort of a very forceful and powerful player in the European Commission? So what's your speculation there on names and who is going to lead financial services policy in the next 5 years?
Well, I'm going to duck that, Gregor, a little bit because I think it's too early. Well, the point I would make, though, is that if this agenda is going to move forward in a dynamic way, if it's going to be a key area of the new commission's work, then who leads this work at the highest levels in the commission is critical. In my view, too, it means finding ex ante political agreements with the parliament and the council on the objectives and particularly on the timing and monitoring of the defined priorities. So the personalities really, really do matter here. And I think we've seen in the past, you know, very big files can be moved forward, but it requires a lot of heavy lifting, a lot of determination, and we will see who comes out. And I think the president, whoever it is, would be wise to nominate a vice president basically responsible for delivering this agenda, probably with a new type of DG FISMA that Fiona was hinting at, probably a little bit wider, more able, not specifically just dealing with financial services, but dealing with this broader economic security agenda. And Fiona's absolutely right there. That is, I think, will be the focus of the letter report. I think the two, letter and the Draghi reports, are extremely important because will the Commission take these basic ideas up? And if they do, coming back to what you were asking me, Gregor, who is going to be the person in charge? And these are going to be the critical decisions. And the politics afterwards, working with the council and the parliament and driving it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, David. And last question from my side would be about your views about sort of a potential Trump 2 administration in Washington and what you see the impact of that would be, since this is keeping us all awake at night.
Do you want to do that, Fiona, or shall I? I think what we're hearing and seeing is a very inward-looking, would be a very inward-looking new administration with apparently a 10% tariff on everything. I think that would certainly make and could affect the free flow of capital. I hope not. So I think it'll be much more difficult. And of course, if you have a president who's adopting far more protectionist policies, then others will be tempted to do exactly the same across broad sectors of the economy. So. Yes, I think this could affect Europe quite strongly. It could actually accelerate. I mean, it could be very strong arguments to accelerate developing the capital markets in Europe as well. So, yes, I think there'll be big implications for Europe.
And maybe just to add to that, there's a lot to be said on the international side as well about global cooperation. As we mentioned at the beginning, we've just seen the passage of the European implementation of Basel III, but there are big challenges for global coordination on things like digital regulation, on crypto regulation, on non-bank financial intermediaries, for example. So at the same time as we see a lot of forces fragmenting the global markets and the global picture, I think we will see, at least at the working level, a lot of effort put into international cooperation and frameworks that can at least try to level some of the playing field and diminish some of the fragmentation we're seeing globally. And obviously that's the polar opposite of Trump and maybe a balancing factor somewhat within the financial sector regulation picture.
Excellent. Thank you. I think we are sort of coming to the end of this call. It's time to wrap up. Thank you so much, David and Fiona, for sharing your views ahead of the elections, European Parliament, and the changes in the Commission. I would like to thank everybody for your time. And should you have any follow-up questions, please feel free to reach out to Fiona or David or myself. Thank you very much and goodbye.